You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Piper Corp, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program from the Ecological Society of America, where I interview scientists who are involved in ecological policy issues. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Diane Pataki, a professor of ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of California, Irvine. Dr. Pataki, your research focuses on urban ecosystems and how landscape decisions impact ecosystem services. Can you talk a little more about your work?
So in my lab, we study the impacts of urban vegetation and soils on the physical environment. So we're interested in how people's landscapes affect things like temperature, local climate, greenhouse gas emissions, air quality, things like that. So those issues have been really well studied in natural ecosystems, but ironically, we have very little data on those physical effects in urban ecosystems, even though urban landscapes are specifically designed to give people services. There's not been a lot of work quantifying those services.
So as an urban ecologist, then, do you think that naturally there's some degree of policy involvement in what you do?
We deal with policy sort of on two levels. We have to deal with the fact that it's decision-making by humans that strongly impacts everything we're studying in urban ecosystems. So in that respect, decision-making is just part of the ecosystem. It's part of the way it works, so we have to understand it. Also, policymakers are extremely interested in the results of our work. Generally speaking, it's easier for people to see the impacts of our research sometimes than it is for people to understand why people want to study natural ecosystems. So we do get a lot of interest from people in government, people in nonprofit agencies, and individual residents as well.
As a scientist, do you do any work with packaging the data to present it to them in a certain way, or do you go through other groups, or how do you interact with people who are interested?
Well, we've had different kinds of conversations with policymakers. Some of our colleagues, my co-PIs on a lot of our projects, are social scientists, and so they study decision-making, and they study communication sometimes, which is helpful. But we've had meetings with policymakers. We presented some of the results of our work to the City of Los Angeles in a meeting that they organized in City Hall, which was very helpful. Sometimes we have formal conversations or more informal conversations. I mean, I can't say that we're experts in communicating our science. That's something that scientists always struggle with. But we've tried a number of different ways, and we're learning as we go.
So urban greening projects are really taking off, and a lot of cities have been taking up tree planting initiatives in an effort to be more environmentally friendly. And planting trees is frequently talked about as a way of reducing atmospheric carbon dioxide. But your work has looked at some of the trade-offs, right, associated with these sorts of programs, particularly because trees increase city water demands.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at urban tree planting in through different regions in the U.S. There's places in the U.S. where if you plant trees, you are reforesting areas that used to be forests, and those areas generally have rainfall that can support trees, though there's still a lot of trade-offs in tree planting. In the western U.S., most cities are planting trees in areas where there's not enough rainfall to support forests, so they have to be irrigated. And usually for their whole lives, not just for establishments. So there's a big water use effect. When people talk about the effects of trees on sequestering CO2 from the atmosphere, they often quote the direct impacts of trees on sequestering CO2 because that's a number that is sort of readily available. We know pretty well how much carbon trees store, but that number is pretty small when you look at how much CO2 is emitted by cities in terms of fossil fuel emissions from combustion and energy use. So it's really the indirects of trees on energy use that are probably the most significant. And those are the least well understood. We don't really know how trees impact things like temperature, and temperature impacts air conditioning and heating of buildings and therefore impacts fossil fuel emissions that way. So even though the direct CO2 effect is understood, it's not really the impact that we should be studying. The issue does get complicated. We don't know the costs and benefits of these greening programs really well yet.
So does that ever get sticky when you're communicating that to the public? Because here, you know, you have these policymakers who are trying to do the right thing, but it seems like they could be maybe missing the mark a bit.
Well, everybody likes trees. So we start to talk about the fact that sometimes trees have unintended consequences that are not all positive. People can react in various ways And I like trees too, and you know, I think we have to accept that there's an aesthetic component to urban ecosystem services that's perfectly valid, that some of the services that ecosystems provide are aesthetic and cultural and psychological. So we have to look at all those things. I don't think people really want to have a landscape that has a positive environmental impact but is really aesthetically displeasing. So we do have to take it all into consideration, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
You've established that non-native tree species may sometimes be the best choice for balancing water demands versus climate benefits. Are you ever concerned about sending mixed messages about non-native species? So, you know, now that people are finally getting native is better, if you think that these sort of caveats may complicate it too much for people to handle.
Yeah, it is a very complicated issue. Obviously, invasive species are a huge problem. But I live in a city where there's very, very, very few native tree species, period, because this area is naturally a shrubland. So the only options that we have for tree planting using native species are species that require a lot of access to groundwater. That's where you find trees here in Southern California. There's oak species, which use less water. They're also really slow growing, so they're not an ideal solution. So the options are just really limited. If people want trees, we're going to have to look at non-native options. Now, we do have to exclude species that clearly can escape from urban landscapes and can invade natural areas. And, you know, really, we have to do a lot more work in educating people about which species those are. So hopefully we can deliver this message in a way that satisfies both criteria. We want trees that don't use a huge amount of water and give us other services that we need, but we don't want to exacerbate species invasions either.
So now that policymakers are in the process of doing these tree planting programs, have they been reaching out to you?
Well, people want to know which species they should choose, and there's a huge number of options, especially in a very mild climate like the one where I live. I mean, you can choose from 1,000 different species, and so they want to know which are the best ones. And we can never answer that question unless we get more information about which priorities are important to people. There's no ideal set of species that will meet every single criteria. And there's so many criteria. There's very physical criteria. You know, you need trees of a certain size. There's maintenance criteria for cities in terms of how much money and time they have to spend on maintenance. There's all of these environmental criteria about resource use, pollution effects. It goes on and on. People have discussed with me areas that are fire prone, and so you need species that are not flammable. And so you just can't find a set of species that can optimize all of the benefits and minimize all of the costs. So people have to reiterate a set of priorities that are important to them, and then we can come up with some options. But there are going to be different options for different stakeholders. And again, that is a message that's not very simple to communicate, but that's the dialogue that we try and have with policymakers when they ask these questions.
How, as far as your own involvement with local policy, how did you get involved and what kinds of people do you interact with?
Well, I've done projects in two cities. One was in Salt Lake City, where we looked at CO2 emissions from the Salt Lake Valley metropolitan area. And we had a long stakeholder process where we tried to engage a whole variety of stakeholders, from the government to private industry and nonprofits. And we actually had a whole series of stakeholder workshops that were led by my colleague Tarla Ray Peterson, who is now in Texas. And we tried to communicate our goals in studying CO2 emissions. And this was several years ago, a little bit before climate change was accepted as a serious problem. We found that the best way to communicate with stakeholders at that time and in that place was to discuss the linkage between CO2 emissions and other air pollutants that cities have to minimize because of EPA regulations. And so that was a very long process, and it took several years. And in the end, we had a model simulating CO2 emissions that was jointly built by the researchers and by the stakeholders. In Los Angeles, I started working on a project that was associated with a program in the mayor's office, a tree planting program. We got funding from the National Science Foundation to study that program, but we collaborated with the city and had interviews and meetings with members of the city and with their nonprofit partners. And that program is still ongoing. So we're still having those conversations about tree planting programs and what the best way is to proceed, what are the best species to choose. We don't have all the answers yet, but it's been a very interesting process, learning what the city and the stakeholders wanted and hopefully giving them some information about what we know.
That was Diane Pataki from the University of California, Irvine. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time on The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.